It's like sports poetry. And sure, it may not rhyme, but man, it's freaking beautiful. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Third hour of Primetime Sports on this Wednesday. It's Brad Fay in for Bob McCowan alongside Damian Cox. And boy, good timing that what just came down the wire from Montreal, because if Carey Price is as good as we think he is, and if he's good enough to lead a team to a Stanley Cup almost by himself, it's getting closer to that, because a medical update, and we'll give it to you, and then we'll welcome Kelly Rudy, Alex Galchenyuk, and David Desharnais, both with knee injuries, are expected to miss the next 6 to 8 weeks for the Montreal Canadiens. Wow. So on that note, Kelly Rudy from the NHL on Sportsnet, kind enough to join us on this night. Kelly, how are you?
Brad and Damian, I'm fantastic. I'm out at out in Glendale getting ready for the Flames game tomorrow night, so looking forward to it.
I got to look at the last few times you get to go to Glendale, or we won't talk about that, where they're going to be playing. But Glendale is a good place to be in early December, without question. But what's the first reaction for you with beyond the obvious with the Galchenyuk and Desharnais both being gone for 6 to 8 weeks?
It sure seems like more than ever teams have to put up with catastrophic injuries to some of their core players. So these are injuries that they will be hard to overcome, but nonetheless, you can do it. As you guys said, with world-class goaltending like Carey Price, you have a better chance than most organizations to get through something like that.
I was going to say, Kelly, the last year about this time, they were without Carey Price and had most of the other guys, but they completely fell apart. I think we would be shocked, and I think you would be too, that with Price but without these significant guys, if the same thing happened.
I would be shocked.
Yeah.
I think one of the things you can do, Damian, when you lose skaters is that you can still play with your structure and you have your systems in place and you demand more attention to detail and you do things like that, whereas if you remove the most important player on the ice, the goaltender, no matter how well you play in terms of structure and so on, you still can't make up for saves not being made. So I think that that's one of the reasons why you usually see, unless you have, maybe like Dallas, where they had, I think at some point, 6 or 7 injuries, that's really, really difficult to overcome. But I think you even look at Calgary earlier, again, the team that I cover on a regular basis, they lose Johnny Gaudreau. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you know, a lot of their fan base is, oh, no, what are we going to do? Well, the fact of the matter is he's back now, and they played incredibly well while he was gone. Not to say that they'd prefer him out of the lineup, but you can find ways to overcome injuries from skaters, unless the number's too great.
Now, the scary part for the Habs, Kelly, is that they lost Desharnais and Galchenyuk through the middle of this road trip, but they ended up, I think they lost 4 out of 5, didn't they? They won the one game in L.A. So they were coming down to earth anyways. They had a good start out of Shea Weber, great start out of Carey Price. Is there somebody on that team, a good start out of Alexander Radulov, is there somebody on that team now that you would look to and say, okay, with these guys missing, they're going to need more out of this player if they're going to sustain anything close to where they were earlier in the season?
I don't know if I can pinpoint one player because
I'm wondering about Pacioretty.
Yeah, Pacioretty, if he can get on with his coach.
Yeah.
But having said that, hasn't Pacioretty been in that situation basically all year? Forget about the injuries, but he's been a guy, and I know Nick Kiprios has talked often about him on Saturdays, that got to find a way to get him going. And whether it's because he's just, like most goal scorers, incredibly streaky, and he hasn't found that hot stretch yet. Basically, I think you just ask what I would do, and I've been in a situation where the management calls in the, say, 5 or 6 leaders on the team, and remind them how important it is that they lead the charge. And you don't have to go out and feel like you have to single-handedly win games, but you need to go out there and perform to the best of your abilities and sort of lead through example that way. And the great leaders have no problem with that. They're able to do that. But I just think that other than Pat Schrede, it's almost a little bit unfair to single out a guy or two because they're all in it together. I recall early in my career, it might have been my second or third year, Billy Smith ended up spraining his ankle, and he was going to be out a significant amount of time. And I recall Dennis Potvin pulling me aside one time and saying, listen, don't feel like the whole responsibility of wins and losses is all on your shoulders. It's all of us. We'll help protect you. You just go out and make the saves you need to make, and we'll get through this. And in no time, it seemed like, happily for all of us, Billy ended up coming back and we survived no problem. So I think that instead of doing that, looking at for individuals, that's the attitude you need. We're all in it together. We'll help you. You help us contribute and we'll get through this.
You mentioned the Flames, your team that you cover regularly in on the Sportsnet regional channels with Rick Ball, and they're 6-1-1 in their last eight. And you had also mentioned Johnny Gaudreau being out, scores on his first shift back, but they've got it turned around now. At least it appears that way. Do you think they have?
I do, Brad. I think that one of the things I was a little bit concerned about going into last night's game in Dallas was, okay, they worked their tails off to get back to 500. I think that was a simple goal that they had, or at least a attainable goal. I wouldn't say simple because it's awfully difficult to win in the league these days, but so they achieved that on the weekend. And then I was kind of wondering, how often have we seen teams do something like this? There's this great push, and then all of a sudden it's like they take their foot off the gas. They're like, okay, we've done it now. And that was a concern going into last night's game, in fact, for me. But I'm happy to report that, no, they're forging ahead. I don't think that they're happy just being one game over 500 now. I feel that this team completely believes in the coaching staff and what they're trying to do. Because if you guys recall how they played a couple of years ago when they roared into the playoffs under Bob Hartley, and trust me, guys, this in no way is an indictment against Bob because I think he's a heck of a coach. But the style that they played, that run and gun, the chip and chase, the long stretch passes, although incredibly exciting, and I was lucky to be covering virtually every game, I didn't think it was all that sustainable. Whereas the style they play now is more a National Hockey League style where you can do it. You don't need everybody to be at the complete top of their game every night because it's so exhausting. But, you know, you get pucks in deep. You're great on the forecheck. You play as five-man connected units all over the ice. There are guys like TJ Brody, which were, I think everybody in the hockey world noticed him 2 years ago because he's always up in the rush and he's so great. He's an incredible skater. I was raving about him. But he's been asked to play a sort of different style. Now, he's still given a green light, but he has to be on the bottom side of the puck often. They want him to read the play and jump in when it's really, really a safe play or something looks like it's going to develop as opposed to sort of forcing it every once in a while.
Kelly, Brian Elliott came to Calgary with the expectation he'd be the number one goaltender. Everyone had that expectation. I think Chad Johnson's now made four straight starts. I don't know who's getting the start in Arizona. Maybe you do, but yeah. What do you make of their goaltending situation? Is this just a temporary thing, or is this a real fight to see who's going to be number one in Calgary this season?
I think the fight's still on. I still think that as well as Chad Johnson has played, and I've become a true believer in him. You know, when he had that great year a couple years ago in Boston, I really took notice. And then he went to Long Island, and his record is 500. And I thought, okay, well, maybe that's a little bit more what he is. But then he has another fantastic year in Buffalo, and how he started this year, I think what it's really showing is that although he's 30 years old, patience is the key for a lot of these guys, and he's really developed a strong mental attitude. But having said that, Brian Elliott, as you guys both know, Brad and Damian, he battles. That's how he made a name for himself in the National Hockey League. So through this stretch where he started off poorly. He had, I think, four really strong games, and then he's kind of cooled off a little bit, although the team kind of is a tiny bit fragile playing in front of him because they feel so badly that they're not helping him more. But he said all the right things, and it's not fake. I can tell a phony when I see one. And what he continues to tell you is are things like how players that end up making the National Hockey League, how they weed out everybody along the way because they're mentally stronger. They don't give in. They don't say, oh, woe is me. Times are tough. But, you know, I'm looking for a break. He doesn't ever say any of that kind of stuff. He's, like, forging ahead. I thought his last two games were really strong. He had an excellent game going in Buffalo until they gave up three power play goals to the Sabres about 10 days ago, and then he was extremely strong in an overtime loss to the Islanders. So I believe he's making his way back. I believe that the goaltending battle will continue, and that's a really healthy thing.
I would imagine, Kelly, the goaltending fraternity at large probably felt for Jonas Enroth when he was waived by the Maple Leafs this week. Very few appearances. Didn't have a lot of good games. You saw him in Calgary where he gave up those two goals in the first minute of play. Really tough for him. And now it looks as though, although Antoine Bebo is the call-up for now, but they have signed Kerry Ramo to an ATO with the Toronto Marlies with the expectation of many that he will ultimately become the backup with the Leafs. You saw a ton of him last year. I think at one point he played 34 or 42 games or some string, and then he got hurt. Yeah. Do you see him as a guy who can be better for them than Enroth and supply a solid backup to Freddie Anderson?
Well, first I'll talk about Enroth. I am disappointed for him. He's one of the guys also that he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he gets by because he's got heart and he battles. So that's what I've known about Enroth for his entire career, that he's a guy that goes out there and he competes with his teammates, he fights with them, and for whatever reason, it has not gone well for him this year, and it's clearly a broken system or whatever tandem right now. But I can tell you guys, if and when Ramo starts to play and his knee is healthy enough for him to start playing some games, you're going to love him. He's really technically strong. He's really athletic. He's a really strong person. He's big, and he's bigger than most goaltenders in that he's very muscular and strong. He competes extremely hard. I last year, prior to his injury, I was telling people he's a bona fide number one goalie in the National Hockey League now.
Wow. Why didn't they re-sign him, Kelly?
I don't know exactly, but I can tell you that I think there were concerns about the knee, about how long it would take. And he had a catastrophic knee injury. So to me, that's still a concern. I mean, you have a guy that plays that way, and he's coming back from one of the worst injuries you can have. So I think until you find out that answer, and I don't think the Flames can wait. So having said that, here's a guy. I don't know what level he's going to get back to, but at one point, I'm not going to tell you he's the top 5 or 10 goalies in the world, but he was definitely a number one goalie. No excuses. I wasn't favoring him simply because I was biased. He truly earned that position.
I'm going to take you back because don't worry, Dan. I'm not going to ask Kelly about Larry Bird, but it's Larry Bird's 60th birthday, and we've been talking about rivalries and how Magic and Bird, and then you had Brady and Manning, and the NHL was close a few times. So I know you would never have admitted it then, but if you can remember in 93, if it ever came up, the thought is you guys made your run with Wayne Gretzky, obviously, and Pittsburgh had their best year. They won their previous two Stanley Cups. They were runaway the best team in the league and obviously got upset by the Islanders. But is there any thought in anyone's mind, or do people begin to speculate a Gretzky-Lemieux Stanley Cup final, which would have given the NHL what it really had never had, the two best players in the league going head-to-head in that kind of situation? Did it ever come up where you just worried about surviving night to night when you guys were going?
Well, I can tell you that we as the players, to the best of my memory, we never brought it up. But I can tell you, individually, we all thought about it, and it was leading towards that. You know, here's the thing: when you played on a team with Wayne, and every single time that you would face one of the other stars, in particular Mario, you knew you had to have your best game. Like, I mean, I recall a road trip where we played in Winnipeg. We had that's when it was kind of funky, and you'd go to Winnipeg, or we would anyways, because the travel was a little bit longer than most cities we traveled to. So we'd oftentimes play on a Friday in Winnipeg and then Sunday in Winnipeg as well. And we won Friday in Winnipeg, and we got absolutely smoked Sunday. And I was just the goalie of record. And I recall somebody made mention to me, maybe McSorley or somebody, said, you know what, forget about this one. Worry about the next one. That's the one that's really important on this schedule, because we're going into Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and every single time you played against the Penguins and Mario with Wayne on your team, you had to be at your best. Now, it wasn't because it was unhealthy. It was just that's the respect they both had for each other, and we were a part of it. So that was really cool, and we ended up winning that game. I can't recall the score, but I kind of redeemed myself, and I was really happy for that. Trust me.
It's great. I mean, it was such a wild time, and he had so many combinations that it could have been the Habs and Leafs, could have been you guys and the Penguins. Yeah. It was a lot of fun, and always a pleasure to catch up with you, Kelly. Enjoy the sun and the heat in Glendale, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, Brad and Damian. I'll talk to you guys soon as well.
Right. So
it's funny,
Kelly,
you know, they talk about the Glendale situation. Most of the people up here have never been to Glendale to see it. It's actually a really nice,
it's a great spot. It's just out of the
spot.
Way.
It's just hard to get there.
Yeah. It's the one highway that goes in. You get on the wrong.
But
time,
now, but, and they've built it up around the arena from
huge,
where it was. And
huge
the arena
parking
is,
with the stadium there.
And the arena is very nice. Yeah. I've really enjoyed it a couple times, ending up going down there. But
yeah.
Getting there is a problem.
It's just, for someone who's going to go every night if they're they're hanging out. There's always love going back to history with Kelly, because 93 and 94 for Canadian fans, the last 2 years that where there was runs on both sides of the, you know, the Habs winning at 93, the Leafs and the Canucks playing the next year in the semis, it just seems a whole generation's lost that. You've seen one team every few years, a Canadian team, almost every one has made a run at the finals, but boy, that was the last of that era from the 70s right through, and Jamie Campbell was part of that as well. He's now concentrating his efforts on baseball down in Washington, D.C.
Well,
at the winter meetings.
And, you know, who isn't at the winter meetings for Sportsnet?
Why not?
They're all down. Hazel's down there. I mean,
the only disappointment being that it's not in Glendale, and you
Jamie's
don't get escape.
There. You guys having a little party down there, Jamie?
You know what, Damien? It's kind of like the way hockey's treated around our place, right? The entire cast of characters is here.
Excellent. I know that a few people were mentioning that, and one of them being Greg Amsinger from the MLB Network, that he feels like Washington is sitting on the pulse of making a big move, and I think they did now, Adam Eaton. So before they made the move, he mentioned it. So it brings me to this. If these meetings were held in Toronto, do you think that something would have been a little more on the front burner with particularly Edwin, who it seems is still in the mix for Toronto? Is there that pressure for the home team to deliver?
I guess that depends. If these meetings had been situated in Toronto and the offer had been made to Edwin a few weeks back, one that he and his representatives declined, and then the Blue Jays went ahead and signed Kendrys Morales and eventually Steve Pearce, I would say, regardless of where they were held, that the offer still wouldn't be there. I know that it's been a difficult situation for a lot of Blue Jays fans because, you know, they've become so attached to him for what he's done for this organization since he came over to Cincinnati. But it's my opinion that his agent, Paul Kinzer, has sort of really misjudged the way the market has developed, because, you know, it's starting to look like Edwin's not going to get anywhere near the term and money that the Blue Jays offered him some weeks ago, which was at the time 4 years and $80 million. And his stock hasn't fallen as a player, obviously. It's just that his services aren't quite as in demand as maybe they thought they would be. So Mark Shapiro said earlier today that they would have to, and when I say they, I mean the Blue Jays, they would have to move an existing player. They would actually have to shuffle their lineup, their existing lineup, around a little bit to have Edwin come back based on what they have done since he declined their contract offer. So, you know, I just don't see, frankly, personally see how it's possible they can consummate a deal with him at this point.
Well, I mean, I guess let's spitball a bit here, Jamie. So to bring Encarnacion back, I mean, he can play first base and he can DH a bit. Kendrys Morales is going to be your DH, I assume, most of the time. But right now they're looking at a platoon at first base with Pierce and Justin Smoke. I suppose you could move Justin Smoke, have Pierce play someplace else, and have Encarnacion play first base. Is that the only scenario, really, that makes any kind of sense?
I guess it is. And there are a couple of things to consider when you suggest that. You know, first of all, you'd have to find somebody to take Justin Smoke off your hands, or you simply eat the money that he is guaranteed for the next 2 years. And that's really not that big of a deal, I guess. You just signed Steve Pierce to a 2-year contract on Monday because you like what he's capable of doing, and to suddenly, you know, suggest that maybe we should move him to another club just seems counterproductive.
No, I mean, he could play some other position, can he not? Is he primarily a first baseman?
You have to keep in mind, Edwin Encarnacion has never played more than, I think, about 80 games in a season at first base in his entire career. I mean, way back when he played 125, 130 games at third base with the Cincinnati Reds, but he is predominantly a designated hitter. And you already have one of those in Kendrys Morales. And Morales is really not a guy that you want playing first base for this team. So you would have to do some serious shifting of personnel to accommodate Encarnacion at this point, on top of, you know, taking away the remaining money that's available for this team to spend, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $25, $30 million when they're trying to go out and get, you know, perhaps another good outfielder. I mean, they need to address the outfield. They need at least one more reasonably good outfielder. They've been in the market for a guy like Dexter Fowler. They need some help in the bullpen. They need a left-hander. Backup catcher is not a big deal, but they are going to have to pursue somebody at some point. So, you know, I think the Blue Jays are in a bit of a bind with respect to Encarnacion in that they've committed money already to a DH. They'd like to utilize the remaining funds as best they could. And at this point, they don't truly have a position for Encarnacion to play.
Right.
And I'm not exactly sure he'd be as productive as we know him as a hitter if you're running him out there 140 games a year at first base. I mean, I'd love to see it, but is it productive for the organization? I'm not exactly sure that's the case.
Interesting. You know, in all sports, there's players that you, as a fan, and as athletes, you hate to play against, but you'd love to have them on your team. And the baseball comparison for me with the Blue Jays, when they brought in Ricky Henderson, he was no more hated guy in Toronto. They bring him in and he helps them, you know, win another championship. In the case of what Dan Duquette said with Jose Bautista, if he's not saying it tongue in cheek that, you know, he told his agent, our fans don't like the guy, we can't sign him. Have you ever heard anything like this where that could possibly get in the way? And what was the reaction for the people asking you as a Toronto crew about it after it came out?
Brad, I've been covering these meetings now 15 years, I think. I've been around this game a bit now. I have never, ever heard a general manager, and frankly, I'm not even sure I've heard a general manager in other sports
yeah.
say,
yeah.
we wouldn't sign this player because our fans despise that player so much. I don't think I've ever heard it before.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you with certainty, it's not just the fan base in Baltimore that doesn't like Jose Bautista. I happen to know there are several players on that team who don't like him either. So, you know, if you were to sign him, you'd have to go to the leader in that clubhouse and say, what do you think of this?
It's unbelievable.
I mean,
to the fan base in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, we all saw when Claude Lemieux went and played for the Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, Jamie, good teams get beyond that. I find it a bit odd, too, for them to look at their fan base and say, our fans don't like them. I saw the crowds in Baltimore 12,000. In September. There's nobody there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I made that point yesterday. First of all, Jose Bautista is a very dangerous hitter, and he would succeed, obviously, at Camden Yards. I don't know what his splits are at Camden Yards career-wise, but I'm sure they're pretty good because I personally have seen him hit a bunch of home runs there. Secondarily, they're a good team that was in contention for a wild card spot right up until the end of the season, and there were seas of empty seats in that stadium. So I kind of joked on the air yesterday, whatever, go and get the guy.
Yeah. know, they'll learn to like him.
Advertised the most hated player you've ever seen come through here is now a member of your own team. Come out and boo him if you choose. Yeah. I mean, you'd know Edwin, you know, you'd know Jose to hit a walk-off home run in the first homestand, and they'd love him from there on in. So
it's just wild.
It's a fascinating situation.
Now, the Jays did make an acquisition today, but a minor one. In fact, they signed Brett Oberholzer to a minor league contract. Does this is he a player who's going to play next year?
He's depth. Yeah. You know, if he plays at the major league level, it's because he wins a job as a long man. I'm quite certain he's out of options. So he'd have to make the team out of camp. Maybe he makes the bullpen as a long guy. He is a left-hander, so I don't see him as one of those situational type left-handers. But who knows? I mean, it depends on how they view him. But I wouldn't get too excited about his signing, because you're going to see a few more of those over the next few days, if not weeks. They have to continue to build their depth, and you'll probably see four or five more of those types of signings by the Blue Jays in the next little while.
Final question, because when we see you guys and the reports that come down, it's often in the hallway? Is it a hotel where you're set up, in a big lobby of a hotel? It's hard to tell.
It's a gigantic convention
center.
I'm not sure how they clean the windows here, but it probably costs about $1 million a year.
So by the time, you know, when you guys come on, it's like it may as well be the tumbleweeds rolling down, you know, behind you. But give us an indication as to what it's really like before you go on and do your report. How many media people are there at this kind of thing? Is it basically every city represented tenfold?
Every city is represented. Every beat writer, most television broadcasters. We're side by side with the Yankees broadcast team on our left and ESPN's Baseball Tonight on our right. And these setups draw actual crowds. I mean, they're actual crowds. It's almost like doing a ball game at the Rogers Center, where crowds come by just to watch and listen, because, you know, managers and some players are being paraded through, and analysts and that kind of thing.
Is it like a Super Bowl? You've done Super Bowls before. Is it like the radio or media row of the Super Bowl kind of thing, in a way?
It's exactly like that.
Yeah.
Exactly like that. Yeah. It's amazing, because I started doing these things years ago, and back then, before the age of Twitter, it was more, it wasn't as big a deal. And I'm sure 30 or 40 years ago, it was even less of a deal.
Yeah.
But that's the,
it's everything now.
Wide era we live in, right?
That's right. Well, Jamie, thanks. Continue to keep us up to speed, and thanks for this. We'll talk soon.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Jamie Campbell at the Winter Meetings. Did you go to a few of those?
Well, and we know we won't be lonely down there.
No, yeah. Well, you know, but it's funny, because you see it, and it's quiet, and I saw one of Hazel's stand-up interviews the other day, and I can't remember who it was with, and it's all, like as Jamie said, it's a massive convention center, just empty behind, but people need to get an idea that it's crazy. And it's fun. If you're into, did you do them?
Well,
did you do many
I've
of those?
I've never done winter.
You've never done those, but you've done the NHL ones. And it's one of those things where sometimes it's a hurry. I've only done a few of those sort of situations. It's a hurry up and wait. But at the same time, it's fun, because if it's in you and you're waiting for the stories and there's something to wait for, it's kind of like even a lockout or something, where you're waiting for the news to come. There's a bit of energy that gets you past perhaps a lack of sleep sometimes.
And things do happen at the winter meetings.
Yeah,
and it's funny, you know, I compare them to the National Hockey League. The NHL seems to have decided they're going to take pride in having meetings, general managers, board of governors, where nothing happens.
Yeah.
And they're nothing happens.
It's always in a nice place. Put it in, Bangor, Maine, and then you'll get something done. It's when they go to Palm Desert and all those places.
Yeah, and whereas baseball, at the winter meeting, stuff happens. And to me, that makes so much more sense. I mean, baseball's already got an advantage, I think, without a salary cap, that teams have much more flexibility to make moves. We're seeing it already.
Keeps you in the news all year.
Absolutely.
It bridges. This is basically the halfway point almost to pitchers and catchers reporting, right?
So, the winter meetings are, 4 years ago it was Blue Jay fans who were getting all excited because Ari Dickey was coming in, and the big trade to get Jose Reyes and all those guys didn't work out, but it's where dreams come true sometimes.
That's it. Well, in the event trying to get history into every single block of the show. Do you remember exactly when? Because
I remember if I was ever in Washington watching Larry Bird play?
No, I was in school when it happened. Was it the winter meetings, or was it when was the Carter Alomar, the big, stirred the trade?
Yeah. 91 or 92, so whatever that was.
Yeah, this week. So 26 years ago this week, they're telling us. So same exactly, the winter meetings, because it's one of those things. And then immediately from that point forward, Boston doesn't need to sell tickets, but with Chris Sale and with the Blue Jays, when they made that trade, immediately from that point until April 1st and opening day, you've got something to build on.
Absolutely. And yeah. You know what? I mean, and I think what Jamie was saying about Edwin Encarnacion makes a lot of sense. I mean, you can say, yeah, but how?
How?
How and where?
Yeah. Too late almost.
But you have to believe there's a move coming here of some substance.
Yeah.
Whether it's Dexter Fowler or something else. So we shall sit and wait.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the meantime, we'll take a break. One final one on Primetime Sports. When we return, we will hook up with the St. Ricketts of the Toronto FC, who are, you might have heard, playing for a championship this weekend against Seattle. We'll talk to the Canadian on the TFC Reds roster when we return with Damian Cox and Brad Fay on Primetime Sports.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Back on Primetime Sports, 6:39 on Wednesday. Final block with Damian Cox and Brad Fay in for Bob McCowan.
So let me ask you this, Brad Fay. Can you ever remember it being the second week of December, Raptors are playing, Leafs are playing, and the biggest game in town
is neither one.
Is neither one, but a soccer game on Saturday.
And the second of three big dates at BMO Field, the Grey Cup, which produced one of the spectacular games in the CFL's history in terms of championship games. We've got the Centennial Classic. It's all the different names, right? Did I get that right?
You got that one.
Outdoor game coming up on New Year's Day. And is it New Year's Day or New Year's Eve? New Year's Eve is the alumni, which is a bigger game because Kipper's playing. Yeah. So anyway, you can see we both don't do hockey all the time anymore. And, otherwise, we'd probably all still be there right now, that early. And then the MLS Cup, and what a great move by the league. First of all, before we talk about the combatants, obviously Toronto hosting at BMO Field, but moving it to the site of one of the teams in it instead of a neutral. You can't do the neutral thing until you're established like at the NFL level. I don't even know if they had a best of seven Stanley Cup final in a neutral site, whether there's enough hockey fans or even one game to show up to watch.
Hey, we're happy about it.
Anyway, how big is this on the landscape? Because this has really been an impressive rise. They had their group of soccer fans, and let's give the fans of Toronto FC credit because they've been there from the get-go, and they were the only ones because the TV ratings were basically double of what the attendance was, and then slowly it's built. And this is a team that has caught the imagination in a league that did it right, small stadiums, slow expansion, and they're in a great place right now, and Toronto FC has finally arrived at that top level.
Well, and the two-game series with Montreal was spectacular.
Incredible.
I mean, it really was spectacular and really set the stage for what could be a great final.
Yeah. All right. To St. Ricketts is the Canadian qualifier on the
he's
Canadian
not the
club.
Only Canadian.
No, but I mean, he's the one with us, so he's carrying Canadian colors into championship. We talked courtside, saying welcome, by the way, and we talked courtside at the Raptor game, had a quick chance to discuss it and how much it means, and here we are a couple of days away. What's the mood like around the club? Are you guys just ready to go?
Oh, yeah. And by the way, thanks for having me.
You got it.
Just excitement. Excitement and anxiousness. we're preparing how we have to prepare for the finals and doing what we need to do, but you can just sense there's an excitement around the training grounds.
I mean, it's interesting, to say that people have talked about this being and the victory over Montreal being so big for Canadian soccer. And I went, well, hang on a second. This is a Canadian club team. This isn't the Canadian national team. In your own mind, I mean, I'm sure you've been waiting for breakthroughs for Canadian soccer. You're one of our brighter young players. Where does this rank in terms of development of the game in Canada, the fact that TFC is in the MLS Cup?
It's massive. I mean, especially because of the academies, to have a team that is doing well in the MLS League and to have academies like even the Impact Academy and Toronto FC Academy and Whitecaps Academy, this is big for those players coming up in the system, having something to, you know, inspire them and give them that extra push to make it to the next level.
Now, the other thing that Damian just mentioned before we came on, you probably heard on the line, just talking about the spectacular nature of that final championship conference series with Montreal. And, it, you know, you can't get away from it. You're a soccer player by trade now in this country, but you understand that there are the purists. But to get everybody on board in Canada and North America at large, there needs to be games like that. There needs to be a daring brand.
You're talking about scoring.
Of soccer played. It's scoring and lead changes. And, you know, is that something that not that you guys are obviously going to go out there and try and score, but is it something that you've been conscious of growing up playing the game in this country that people maybe don't appreciate the 1-0 games as much as the soccer purists do and should?
Of course. It's strictly entertainment. And if you don't really understand the concept of soccer, the battle for possession, and really love that part of the game, you're going to want to see the exciting parts, goals, up and downs, the emotions, you know, 1 second be like almost being eliminated and the next second being on top. So this series had all that, and it was made for TV.
It certainly was.
Well, and you came on as a substitute and scored a great goal. And I mean, I'm thinking, you know, even you're obviously a purist because you play the sport, but you must enjoy playing in a game where there's some goals being scored as well. I mean, that's what you do.
Oh, of course. I mean, personally, I love scoring goals.
Yep.
The more goals I can score, I'm happy. But yeah, it was no doubt a very exciting match for the players, the supporters, and the viewers. So you can't take anything away from it. You've got to be proud that we were a part of it and that we came up on top.
I was just going to say, it's funny, you know, there's been a lot of talk, a lot of build up to this game on Saturday, but not much talk about the opponent, at least around here. Seattle, what do you know about them? What do you think they're going to bring to the table? How are they going to be different than, let's say, Montreal was?
Yeah, were you here when the 1-1 tie?
Earlier? Yes, I was watching.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, go ahead.
They're different, you know. Obviously, the West is a bit different than the East, but I don't think it's anything that we haven't like played against this season. So we're preparing how we need to prepare, player for player, who's dangerous, what we need to worry about, their tendencies. So I know we'll be prepared, and I got to tip my hat to Greg Vanney because he does an excellent job preparing the players and getting everyone on the same page. And I have no doubt that he'll have us prepared for that match.
Yeah, what I like about this, it's almost, and you, both of your teams obviously earned your way here, but if they had sat back and said, let's reward the two fan bases that have been the most supportive. Seattle has got a crazy fan base and they play in the Seahawks stadium. They fill more than half of it for their games. And obviously you can speak to what goes on at BMO Field. It's become one of the electric venues in North American sports over the last, you know, especially 6 weeks and when this playoff run began. It's just unbelievable, overflowing. Tickets sold out in 3 minutes' time. I'm sure it's one of the great places you've played. Do the guys on your team that have played around the world and the Michael Bradleys of the world, do they appreciate how loud this crowd is?
Oh, yeah. Everyone appreciates the supporters, you know. They've been with us since day one, and, you know, we're all grateful to return the reward to them, you know, because that atmosphere, even on the last leg of the Montreal series, they were fantastic. We went down a goal and they never went against us. You know, they had our back the whole way and they actually had a great deal in the comeback and pushing for that victory. So they've been fantastic, and I know they'll be just as fantastic in the finals.
But the weather is obviously going to become more and more of a factor. I mean, it was against Montreal in the final game. It was raining, but it wasn't, well, at least for me sitting at home, it wasn't as cold. It's starting to get colder out there. Tell me how that changes the nature of this game, and particularly for players who have to come on during the match. I'm thinking that's got to make it more difficult.
Yeah, it's got to be prepared. You got to dress warm. You got to get your pocket warmers. And like you said, it's more difficult for the players coming in. But, you know, our physical staff will have us fully warm and ready to enter the match. And the players that are in the starting 11, once you get going and the adrenaline and you're running around, the weather is the last thing on your mind. So it'll be cold, but I don't think it'll play too much of a factor.
zero is the forecasted high and minus five for a low. I mean, it's not like you guys haven't been preparing for this. So final thought on this in terms of what you guys do now. Is it sort of on a road game? I imagine to be on lockdown now between now and the game on Saturday or close to it. But are you guys all in your own homes? Are you staying in a hotel the last couple nights? What's the process before the cup?
No, we're all at home. Just same thing as usual. You don't really want to change up the format right before the last game. We're all professionals. We all know how to, maintain a good level and get the right rest and stay hydrated and just buy into everything Greg's telling us and come into the match with big hearts and pray for the result.
As Brad said, the tickets for this game sold out in 3 minutes. Usually what happens, particularly and I imagine does for the Canadian guys, you get all of a sudden you find you have way more friends than you ever knew you had, and they all want to come to the game. Have you been scrambling for tickets for this game? Have you got family coming in for this one?
Once the playoffs started, I basically told everyone, you're on your own for
tickets. Good for you.
Well, good luck. Yeah,
I didn't want to deal with the headaches.
No, that, yeah, guy, you
it's
got
expensive too.
Bigger things on your mind. And here's hoping for another a daring game, and for all the fans of Toronto FC and Canadian soccer fans, hoping for the first victory north of the border. Good luck on Saturday.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
You got it. All right, there he is, to St. Ricketts. This
but,
is.
I mean, it is. I mean, being here in Toronto, but for most Canadian cities, to be talking soccer at this time of year is really extraordinary. And I'm not a significant soccer fan, but you have to talk about it.
Yeah.
And Toronto FC has forced its way into the local
Absolutely.
Conversation
yeah.
by being successful. This city's dying for a champion. It's interesting, I wrote about this on the weekend. It's 5 years, what's today, the 7th? 5 years on Friday since Rogers and Bell went together and bought 75% of MLSE from the Ontario Teachers Pension Fund. And most of us thought, well, this isn't going to work. How's this going to work?
Yeah.
These companies don't like each other. Since then, you've seen Toronto FC get to a championship game. You've seen the Toronto Raptors get to a Final Four. You're seeing the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think we'd all agree, building an intelligent,
on the way.
Promising
yep.
way. And all of a sudden, Bell and Rogers may still not like each other when it comes to cell phones and tablets and all sorts of other stuff. But they have found a way to develop some winning teams.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to give them credit for that.
Absolutely. And it'll be one of those on a Saturday that, we saw the ratings, and it's not on our network, but you can't deny the numbers were unbelievable.
A million four, I think.
It won the night and, blew away everything else that was on. And literally, we're talking about 3-4 years ago that this was a team that was well under 100,000 for ratings.
Well, they weren't even on the radar.
No, and as Bob said, it's fair. That game is not the marker for forever because it involved two Canadian teams and it was a do-or-die second game of the leg. But it's still a pretty good start because I didn't expect that. I expected 500,000. I did not expect them to go crazy like they did.
No,
and who knows what the MLS Cup will bring.
And to what I was saying before, they just weren't in the conversation.
Yeah.
When we were talking about the Argos as the number four team, if we were ever talking about the number four team in Toronto,
That's flipped.
It's Toronto FC and the Argos are number five, and they've got to figure out a way to get back into the conversation.
Indeed, and we are closing in on the MLS Cup game, 3 days away, Saturday at BMO Field. That'll do it for us. For Damian Cox, I'm Brad Fay in for Bob McCowan on this day. It was fun, and I'm guessing he will talk to you tomorrow. Enjoy your evening wherever you're listening and watching. Thanks for joining us.